So if you want to know how HIV is spreading, it's because you have people out there using even condoms and not knowing how to use them correctly.
Hi, welcome to the NCCHCA podcast. I'm your host, Alvin Capitaco, and this is part two of our interview with Deborah Weeks, CEO of C.W. Williams Community Health Center in Charlotte. We continue our discussion on HIV awareness, prevention, and treatment, and Deborah starts by talking to us about the incline of HIV in the United States.
I do think there's a dramatic incline again with HIV, as we know, so much so that I was very concerned when our former administration was talking about getting rid of HIV, Ryan White. That was scary to me. You know, how do you provide care and services and protection and condoms and all and lessons and, you know, such? What also scares me about HIV in this country are the states that won't allow you to educate the children, you know, the tweens and the teens and the college students about protected sex and what is sex. You know, we still have a generation of people who think that they have anal sex. That's not sex. Or that they're not necessarily going to get HIV, especially the heterosexual community, not understanding that sex is sex is sex, even if it's cunnilingus as opposed to intercourse. It's sex. So we need to have those lessons and provide that information. I remember my team invited me to the university, FAMU, to go into the classroom to look at what they were doing, you know, to witness how they were training these big football players and everybody, you know, the big shots. And so it was interesting how, we knew how to put on a condom. And of course, everybody was using the anatomical dolls and big guys came out there trying. They did it wrong. They put the condom on incorrectly. So if you want to know how HIV is spreading, it's because you have people out there using even condoms and not knowing how to use them correctly. We must provide the education. We must provide the information.
I get a feeling that they don't seem to promote a lot of PrEP usage here.
I'm so grateful that you brought that up because, in fact, you're so, so right. You are right on target.
Pre-exposure prophylaxis or PrEP. Is medicine people at risk for HIV take to prevent getting HIV from sex or injection drug use? When taken as prescribed, PrEP is highly effective for preventing HIV, according to the CDC.
I think that people think that PrEP is connected to HIV and that they don't want to be outed as having inappropriate sex or that their partner is not loyal to them or that they may not be loyal to their partner and all these other judgments that they're afraid of being placed on them. We have to get people beyond the judgment. We have to get people to understand what the best possible way of health is. Also, if you want my experiences, when I look at the commercials for PrEP, it gives such misinformation. It really makes it look like it's only the LGBTQ plus community that this relates to when it's not. This is everybody on the planet. If you question, you know how many women are in relationships with men and women, right? Who question whether their partner is faithful. Guess what? If you question it, it's likely that it's true, right? Most of us have real good instinct when we know something exists, it probably does, or it's about to. You need to protect yourself. They're afraid of their partner finding out or their partner knowing or they know that their partner's being unfaithful, but their partner's in denial and all the eruption that it causes. So I think, unfortunately, we have a lot of psychosocial dynamics that occur as a result, psychosocial economic dynamics that occur as a result of relationships. And, you know, who's the power broker in the relationship? That still goes on today.
Do you think there are enough programs in North Carolina to address issues such as HIV prevention, especially amongst the LGBTI community? Because sometimes we know that they are also at a higher risk of contracting HIV. And also, I don't know what the situation here is in America, but I know that in Africa, some women tend to stay in relationships with men just because the man is a provider. So it's also an issue of poverty. Do we see a lot of that here? And are there programs to address some of these challenges?
So about 20 years ago, I was in New York, maybe 25 at this point, and I was in New York. And interestingly enough, they brought up the fact that New York was one of the last of six cities to take off the books women as property. Oh, yeah. And some city only recently, which was the last city to take us off the books, I think it's somewhere here in the South, to take women off the books as property of men. So even though we've lived, quote unquote, a liberated life as women since what, the 70s, 80s, really, you know, still challenged in lots of respect, you still had it legally on the books that if somebody challenged it, you were still legally property if you were married. So that view of property continues to exist. Now, I'm of two philosophies. I have the Christian perspective that marriage is a wonderful thing that God created because what he intended was, and we know dot, 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 what that is. I have the very independent perspective of having been raised by, interestingly enough, with the dynamic that I was raised in, I still had a strong mother who wanted her children to be independent and a father that didn't want his girls to have to rely on men. Okay. So I still had that independent spirit that I was raised in, and I was rebellious and radical from the beginning. So just keep all of that in perspective. Here you have now this Christian woman who really does love the Lord and all that good stuff. And then you have this other side of this woman who feels like marriage is an antiquated system and it does not work for most of us because it was a bartering dynamic that really existed. So what God intended is not necessarily what translated with man because women were sold for tokens. I mean, that's the reality. So now you have this property dynamic attached to women because of the historical perspective attached to it. That continues philosophically or idealistically, or even if it is an unconscious reality in the hearts of people today. So you have this thought process of property attached to all that historical stuff that I don't care if you're in Africa or America, and you know, Africa is centuries older than America, so is Europe, et cetera. The same is true. We are still today in the fight of having everybody look at women differently. So I simply said, this is why you need more women in as many areas of leadership as possible. So these little changes can be made. This is a disadvantage to women. If you look at most countries throughout the world with women leadership, they do better. So I don't mean to make this a political thing, but when you look at us as property, when you talk about property and the attachment of property, whether it's HIV or PrEP, or safe sex, or just how we treat one another in relationship. It is all the same or very similar.
Do you think that religious leaders are doing enough to address HIV and AIDS issues?
Woo, what a loaded question. Okay, so that you know, when I was in Florida, I was kind of lambasted because in fact, I was at a mental health meeting and I was talking about how to church community has been locked into the walls as opposed to out there in the community, understanding what the mental health and emotional health needs of the community that really does exist. And they're too busy trying to play counsel to all people and everyone. And I'm of the perspective that God created a kingdom so that we each have our own skill, talent, and ability that we bring to the church house and we develop. And we help the people as a whole body, all of whom have their own talents, right? But all too often, you know, you'll hear things like, you know, we have Jesus, we have God, we don't need a mental health technician, we don't need a psychiatrist, we don't need a psychologist. When you see the suffering that's happening in the community today, one of the biggest things that would really hurt me throughout the COVID period is the number of ministers that collectively had really fought against staying at home, had fought against listening and adhering to the dictates of our public health officials, you know, still creating these events that were poisoning and killing people with COVID because they want to have the body of the church still coming to church. But how do you regulate COVID? How do you stop COVID? Well, the Lord will take care of us. Well, that's a very, that perspective is, there's something broken with that, okay? Our responsibility as Christians or any religious sect is to take care of people, to enrich people, to build their spirit, to entrust the well and the betterment of everything for them, right? To increase their opportunities. And that includes health. That includes everything health-wise. So why wouldn't you want your church body? So for example, there's a church that we became affiliated with through the COVID testing opportunity because they would not open their doors for any function whatsoever except COVID testing. I applauded Friendship Church for that because I understood and I really revered and respected the decision to close the doors completely. And I thank them for doing that, whereby there were still a lot of other churches still having, you know, you all have heard of the House of Prayer, who was still having their convocation and all these things, even though the public health official long before said, you can't do this, you can't do that, blah, blah, blah. They still had it. So how many hundreds of people became COVID, had COVID, diagnosed with COVID? How many of those hundreds die with COVID? And I think all too often, unless and until, unfortunately, it hits them personally, they remain disconnected. So whether you're in the church or want to be outside the church during a pandemic, is still wrong. We really need to help the church to come outside of itself. I think churches are and have been disconnected with whether you're gay or straight. They close their eyes when we know a lot of people have been serving in the church that are very gay, right? They close their eyes to the fact that they're gay. They don't want to deal with the HIV and some of the sexual activity that may be happening right there among the members. I know this is very harsh for some people to hear, but it's the truth. And we have to get beyond these idealistic views that maintain some level of naivete and removal from society as it exists, as opposed to the society that you ideally would like for it to exist in. You have to get outside of those church walls. You have to really talk to the people. You have to engage your congregation. I'm sure your congregations are out there really wanting to talk to you, to help you as a church to create systems and social programs and other programs necessary. So maybe if we can help the churches and other people to create little tiny successes, you know, create one person to one person, because it is not one person teaching a whole body of people that changes the world. It's one person impacting one person that can change the world.
How has COVID impacted on your work, your HIV work at C.W. Williams?
I feel as strongly about it as I do COVID and COVID vaccines. We still, as many people have come out for COVID, and I'm telling you, a lot more Black and Brown people have come out for the COVID vaccine than we thought would have happened. There's still many, many, many more out there that need the information, that is really relying on social media for their education and misinformation. We need to penetrate, somehow develop the platforms to talk to the community, have an inroads to have those discussions with everyone, not just young people, every age group regarding COVID vaccines. I have appealed to the church body through my call to action that I created last April after COVID to really dig deep and find out what's happening within their congregations and to help us to appeal to the community, especially in the Black and Brown community. You can't get to the community without going through the churches. The churches are very, very important. You are not going to find a lot of communities who are not connected to church on some level. We need the churches to work with our programs. We need the churches to direct and guide and be involved with our program. But we need them also to be educated and to let us know what it is they need to find out about what's happening on our big in the big picture. What's the macro picture look like, not just the micro? What can we expect? What can we anticipate? Let's create systems that work to help people be in touch with one another throughout, whether it's a pandemic or whether they're sick with HIV or, you know, whether they're sick because of diabetes in the hospital. Who is visiting that very lonely woman who lived by herself at 95 or 98 because everybody else that she knew died?
And this concludes our interview with Deborah Weeks. We will bring you more interviews with leaders of community health centers on HIV prevention, awareness, and treatment.